WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. When you woke up this morning and checked Instagram, you may have noticed that your feed was full of solid black squares with the caption, Blackout Tuesday. And not just from friends, but also from celebrities and huge companies. If you're wondering where this message came from and what the message means, here's the deal. Blackout Tuesday started circulating last week along with the hashtag, The Show Must Be Paused. It was created by two black music executives, and the post originally called for people in the music industry to take a break from, quote, business as usual, to use the day to have conversations about how to support the black community. And as the post spread, record labels, music executives, radio DJs, and more members of the music industry hopped on. By yesterday, three major labels were participating, Universal, Warner, and Sony. So were their subsidiaries, as well as many independent labels. And exactly how they're interpreting the day has been varied by company. On their Instagram page, Universal posted a message stating that they would, quote, support and contribute to initiatives chosen by their black creatives. In an open letter, Sony CEO John Platt, who's the only black CEO of a major label, wrote, quote, we must create a platform that provides each and every colleague the encouragement for true self-expression. And now Blackout Tuesday has jumped outside of the music industry. New York cultural institutions like the New York City Ballet, MoMA, the Whitney, the Met have all posted black squares. So have institutions outside the arts like the NBA and the WNBA. Joining me now to talk about where Blackout Tuesday started and how it grew is Pitchfork Editor-in-Chief Pooja Patel. Pooja, welcome back to All of It.
Hi, Allison.
Hi. So who are the two women who started this initiative?
Okay, so there are two black women executives that are adjacent to Atlantic Records, Jamila Thomas and Brianna Agumeng. And essentially, from my understanding of it, they first socialed a message among their internal label and group that just quickly spread and became a big movement outside of themselves.
So, you know, as you said, it spread. Erbo Darden of Hot 97 has said that he won't make any new shows today. How have other individuals like radio hosts and DJs and musicians responded to this?
It's been a mixed bag. I think that originally the post didn't have a clear goal or intent behind it. And so everyone was kind of on their own in how they were interpreting it. So Zane Lowe and Ebro have canceled their radio shows for the day. Though within Hot 97, Ebro is bringing Reverend Al Sharpton on at 7 p.m. to have a town hall. So that was kind of his way of interacting with that. A ton of very popular artists like, you know, in the rock world, like Radiohead and Quincy Jones, Nine Inch Nails, they have all posted the square and kind of showed solidarity with Black Lives Matter. I think some of the more useful posts that I have seen have come from artists like No Name, who is a rapper from Chicago, who has actually been using this moment to post calls from organizers and activists and encourage people to not be silent, but rather to use their platforms to educate and share resources. And she also has a book club called No Name Reads on Instagram and has been sharing kind of informative texts via that as well.
Now, one of the issues that's appeared as the initiative has become more widespread is that it's gotten associated with other hashtags, including Black Lives Matter, but that's an issue, apparently. Can you explain what the issue is?
Yeah, I think the issue there is it's difficult because essentially by posting Black Lives Matter as a hashtag with a black square, you're drowning out all of the informational resources that share that hashtag. So a lot of people have been turning to that hashtag to find resources for criminal justice reform, for protests, for how to act locally within their communities and contact elected officials. And when that hashtag is being used, you know, to support a movement that is simply a black square, it drowns out all of the informational resources that are available.
It's been reported as a day-long event for this Tuesday, but the website associated with this says this is not just a 24-hour initiative. A plan of action will be announced. Do we know anything about a longer-term plan yet?
I don't think that we do. I think one thing that has been useful is that they did clarify this morning, because they did not want this to be a time for silence. I believe the organizers posted a note that said the purpose was never to mute ourselves. The purpose is to disrupt and to pause from business as usual. So that is the clearest kind of plan or intent we have so far.
Pooja Patel is Pitchfork Editor-in-Chief. Pooja, thank you so much.
Yes, of course.
So while the initiative has caught on and the intention is clearly good, a few artists in the industry have questioned it. Umo wrote, "I don't get the music industry blackout thing. What about a pledge to donate all the profits Tuesday?" And producer Jack Antonoff wrote, "What is the price of admission for a black square? Let's see some donations." It's an interesting point. An industry that makes so much money from black creators might want to think about its role in systemic injustice. We want to talk to someone about these ideas, someone smart. So we immediately thought of Dr. Tricia Rose, Brown University's professor of Africana Studies and director of the Center for the Study of Race and Ethnicity in America. She is the author of the seminal book, Black Noise, Rap Music, and Black Culture in Contemporary America. Dr. Rose, nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you, too. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So what did you think about this initiative when you first heard about it?
Well, I think the first thing I thought was that it felt confused, right? I wasn't sure what was being paused and what was being opened up at the same time. So I think it did take off rather quickly, and that the women who thought of it probably didn't expect such a big response. And so there isn't really a complete developed plan in their defense.
Well, let's give some context to this. As we were discussing this in our editorial meeting, we were talking about how dependent the music industry historically has been on black artists. And that dynamic between artist and label is something that should probably be explored. How would you describe it?
Well, I think it needs to be explored. But, you know, the primary word to describe that relationship is exploitation. And although many artists currently make a lot more money than they might have made in past generations when other genres were more, you know, popular, it's always been a deeply exploitative relationship. And so that's number one. Number two, it's also been manipulative in terms of content. You know, there's been a long history of industry labels and producers and other elements in the industry reducing the kind of political content and not releasing, not playing, you know, radical political content. And so those kinds of contexts are really important. And, you know, pausing the show for one day is not in any way going to change that kind of framework. It's going to take a much more significant level of self-interrogation and transformation. And you can't, you know, rewrite the show, which is what really has to happen, unless you're looking at a much more serious long-term plan.
Music producer and songwriter Rafael Sadiq, he posted on Instagram a couple of days ago, and the post said, "Streaming is the same as looting." Mm-hmm. That unless you buy my music from me, I'm not getting any money, bottom line.
Yeah.
How important is the dominance of streaming to the history of exploitation in the music industry?
Yeah, very, really great question, Allison. I mean, you know, there's you know, each technological intervention has been both, in some senses, more democratizing, and at the same time has reduced the power of musicians' ability to control their own artistic production and profit from that production. So, you know, when records come out, you know, a little over 100 years ago, you have a moment where artists can perform without being live. And this gives them audiences and potential revenue that they didn't have when there was no way to record their performances separate from them. But, you know, with each new technology, streaming being the latest, you create contexts in which audience members may have more access to artists, but those who control the access to the streaming find ways to monetize it for the industry and to under-monetize it for the artists themselves. But even more important is the way in which the focus on money changes the content that the artists can legitimately expect to profit from by producing. So they change their content so that they can make whatever little bitty money they can make on streaming, right? Because the certain content may not be as popular. And this is where race becomes extremely important, not just black music itself, but white perceptions of what constitutes black music, white investments in certain kinds of black performances, white refusal to support certain types of racialized images that wouldn't support their expectations. And that shapes the artistry as much as the technology.
So of these music industry executives who made this decision, they put the black squares up, the intention is good. What is something they can actually do that would create change, that would create disruption?
Well, you know, first of all, I think, you know, and I'm speaking very generally here, I'm not speaking about any individuals, but you know, your average, you know, executive in corporate America is not well versed in the history of anything racial, and they're not spending much of their time doing it. So the first thing they need to do is really be serious about significant self-examination and, you know, reading and researching. And they need to involve others in their social and workplace circles in that work. So this kind of, I'm going to pause and come up with a plan and have something by tomorrow is a bit ridiculous. But for sure, they need to rethink how they relate to the tradition of black music. Black music has been extremely important for the emotional sustenance, the spiritual sustenance, the political development of the creative expression of a profoundly disregarded people. So they have a legacy that they are unfortunately extremely powerful in determining its future. So the first thing is to understand they have a moral and ethical responsibility to the tradition, not just to the latest artists, not just to the most popular, the most profitable ones. And so they should be deeply invested in a serious, expansive music education program, and that black music should be at the heart of the curriculum in public schools around the country. And that would be an incredible way to show young people the tradition that they have been a part of that's been largely obscured by the industry because those genres are not selling enough, so they don't pay attention to them, right? So part of this is by changing the market logic and saying there's an ethical, moral responsibility to pay attention to this profound tradition, then they're actually inverting the industry's power. The second thing is, you know, to fund music curriculums in particular. So one is to help support it, but to fund it even outside of schools and see themselves really as music educators themselves. But finally, the thing that I really wish they would do is let black musicians own their own catalogs and acknowledge that the contracts most artists have with record labels are ridiculous. The few that I've seen, and it's been just a few, but they are, you know, they're extremely exploitative, extremely long and one-dimensional. And if someone breaks big, they find themselves, you know, constrained. So this is, you know, why Prince made the number of the choices that he made, for example. And, you know, they don't like to talk about this. It's a deeply exploitative relationship. And so this whole solidarity and pause the show and have a black box, it's, you know, it's a little embarrassing, you know, if you feel a sense of a relationship to them, but it's more infuriating if you see them in the historical terms that they are truly a part of.
Dr. Tricia Rose is Brown University Professor of Africana Studies and Director of the Center for the Study of Race and Ethnicity in America. Dr. Rose, thanks for making time today.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.